to this week's episode of Project MK Gotcha. With you, as always, is me, Carrie, your hostess with the mostest, and...
And Chris, the trusty sidekick who sometimes anchors an episode, but not today.
Yes, shout out to Christopher for the Dark Web episode last week. Which our audio was a little fucked up, but that's not our fault. We were trying a new venue, and it just wasn't as loud as we hoped.
Yeah, we're trying a new recording room, and I guess I had the wrong angle on my face, or I don't know.
Yeah, it's like if we were professionals, we would probably check that shit. I don't know, but if you came here for some professional shit, you're barking up the wrong tree, friend. All right. So I know I said I was gonna do a conspiracy episode this week, and this episode is kind of conspiracy because we don't really know the end result. But okay, so to be honest, I was gonna do an episode on John Wheeler Walker III, who is this guy that was super high up in the government, and he got killed in Wilmington, Delaware.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's actually the guy that is responsible for getting the veteran war memorial, the wall, like, with all the names on it, built in D.C. But honestly, you guys, I did my research, and I think he had a fucking psychotic episode and then just got jumped in, like, the worst neighborhood in Wilmington because... Been to those neighborhoods in Wilmington, and they are scary.
Yeah, I mean, shit happens.
Yeah, if you just walk around with your Rolex on and a bunch of, like, you're in your, like, $2,000 suit, like, you're gonna get jumped in those parts of Wilmington. But if you guys want to do your own research on it, definitely do so. It's an interesting story, and there's, you know, CCTV footage of him, like, wandering around, but he had a history of bipolar disorder and something else, and he was, like, trying to burn down one of his neighbor's houses the day he went missing, so, like, I think he just had a psychotic break, and it was just, like, he got robbed and jumped.
Yeah, attempted arson is kind of a sign.
But for all you conspiracy fans out there, it's definitely... a cool story to get into because of all the, this guy went to Harvard and Yale and got degrees from both. And he was, like, super high up in the military. I mean, not in the military, but, like, worked for, like, the military industrial complex. I don't know. If you're into it, check it out, but I'm not doing that this week. Instead, this week we're doing one of the classics, The Bloody Benders.
Blood.
So I stole this entire article from legendsofamerica.com because I think that this article does the best of telling the story and getting all the important parts across. So this is an article called The Bloody Benders, Serial Killers of Kansas by Kathy Weiser. And I also read a little, disclaimer on her site or on the site that she did an episode of a Discovery show back in 2014 on this topic. And so she's, like, really well versed in this. And if you guys want to read more stuff by her, definitely do so. She's an awesome writer, which is why I'm using her writing and not my own. All right, so.
Fair enough. You know, with the attribution, you know, it's all fair game.
Yeah, totally. And I saw two different last names for her, so I'm sorry if I got it wrong. But Weiser is what I have right here. All right, so let me just set the scene for you kids. We're going back, all the way back to... Okay, so...
Party on, Carrie.
Oh my God, I'm sorry, you guys. So this begins in 1870, right? So in 1870, five families of spiritualists settled in western Labette County, about 7 miles northeast of where Cherry Vale would be platted a year later. One of these families, do you know about spiritualism? Do you know what the spiritualists are?
Is that like a religious sect?
So it's not really a religion. So back in like the late 1800s, early 1900s, people were, like, really fucking into doing, like, seances and, like, the Ouija board and, like, speaking with mediums and stuff like that. And so it created this whole movement called spiritualism. So it was like people that were like, oh, I can talk to the dead, or I know things of how to do this. So they were like in that lane.
And was that like the precursor to like girls now that like pray to crystals and they think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that was part of some of their beliefs, but like the big part of spiritualism was being able to talk to the dead, like having seances or having a medium there or having a Ouija board.
Oh, is that where the Ouija board came from?
I don't know if it came from that. Oh, we should do an episode on the history of the Ouija board. But no, it was like part of that whole movement, which that magician like greatly discredited the whole spiritualist movement. I can't fucking remember his name. Houdini. Houdini. Sorry, I just yelled that really loud into the microphone. I realized people were listening on headsets. anyway, we'll do... I'm definitely going to do an episode on, like, the rise and fall of spiritualism, too, because there's, like, these two sisters. They used to travel around the country, and they would talk to dead people, and then right before they died, they were like, guess what? Joke's on you guys. We've been lying this whole time. But that's a story for another day. Anyway, so that's what spiritualists are. So one of these families was the Benders, comprised of John Bender Sr., his wife Almira, son John Jr., and daughter Kate. A cult-like group, the families chose from several available claims and began to make their homes. John Bender Sr. chose an 160-acre section on the western slopes of the mounds that today continue to bear their name. The property was located directly on the Osage Mission Independence Trail that operated from Independence to Fort Scott, Kansas. His son chose a narrow piece of land just north of his father's. However, he never lived on his claim nor made any improvements. All right, so the family, so I guess this was like back in the day when they were like, everybody move out west. Like, you could pretty much just go out there and claim.
Oh, yeah, they would just give you like a square of land, you know, if you went out.
Well, yeah, whatever you claim, yeah. So you pretty much were just like, fuck you, Indians, we're going to take all your land. So that's what they did. So the family soon built a small one-room framed cabin, a barn, a corral, and dug a well. Inside the wooden cabin, there was a part... Oh, sorry. Inside the cabin, there was, it was, like, partitioned with, like, sheets of canvas. Like, oh, just think of it as, like, a sheet, right? Creating living quarters, and in the back, a small inn and a storefront. So they were running, like, you know, like a 7-Eleven and a Motel 8, you know what I'm saying?
But it reminds me of, like, an Airbnb I stayed in the Bay Area.
Yeah, except this is in the middle of bumfuck Kansas. a crude sign was hung above the front door that advertised groceries to the many travelers along the Osage Trail. The little store carried few supplies, such as powder, shot. I'm guessing shot means, like, bullets?
Like, yeah, like those old round musket bullets.
Oh, God.
Or maybe mini balls. I don't know.
I'm not sure what level guns were at in
1870. Well,
the Civil War.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, so they offered powder, which I'm guessing meant gunpowder, shot, groceries, liquor, and tobacco. And they also sold meals and provided a safe, quote unquote, overnight resting place to strangers along the road. Because I guess, like, everybody was just, like, heading out west. It was just, like, a free-for-all. It was, like, come out here and you can claim whatever land you want. Yeah. So they were just, like, on one of the main paths.
We got guns. We got booze. We got cigarettes.
Yeah, that's all you need. Like, what else do you need? So keeping mostly to themselves, the Benders appeared to simply be struggling homesteaders who worked hard to earn their living like the other pioneers. Immigrating from Germany... John Bender Sr. was 60 years old when he arrived in the area. His wife, about 55, which is freaking hilarious because if you look at pictures of them, they look 85. And I was like, I didn't realize that they were only 55 years old.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day, people age like a motherfucker.
Like, shoot. Especially white people. Standing over 6 feet tall, John was a giant of a man because of his piercing black eyes. Set deeply under huge bushy brows, it earned him the nickname of Old Beetle Brow John. Which I'm like, why has it got to be a beetle brow? Just because he's got bushy eyebrows. But
that doesn't really flow off the tongue. It's like really difficult to say.
I feel like it's like something like my mom would say, like with her country, like beetle little brow. Turns of phrase. Yeah, she'd be like, go pick up that beetle brow shirt off the floor. I'm like, what are you saying to me?
Were those words?
Yeah.
Mom.
Hey, oh my God. What if
Betty,
I.
Betty, if you're listening.
She does listen.
Oh no.
Shout out, Bets. Oh my God. What if I change or what if I pick the derby name Beetle Brow? Like, that's just my derby name.
Oh, that's a sweet name. Yeah.
Beetle Brow John. Except I'm Beetle Brown Joan or something.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll bookmark that for another day.
Workshop it.
Okay, cool. His ruddy face, mostly covered by a heavy beard, sullen expression, and long hair often led to him being described as a wild and woolly-looking man. Both John and his raw-boned wife spoke with such guttural accents that few people could understand them. Miss Bender, a heavyset woman, was so unfriendly and had such sinister eyes that her neighbors began to call her a she-devil. To add to her fierce look, one of my cousins started calling me she-devil when I was a little kid, and he never stopped. So every time he sees me, he's like, oh, this redhead she-devil. But he
I mean, you are a she-devil.
I was a really wild child, so
okay.
Understandable. To add to her fierce look, Ma Bender also claimed to be a medium who could speak with the dead and boiled herbs and roots that she declared could be used to cast charms or wicked spells. Her husband and son were said to have feared her as she ran the household with an iron hand. John Bender Jr. was a tall, slender man of about 25 who was handsome with auburn hair and a mustache. And his picture, I can't place who he looks like, but he just looks so familiar. Like, I think he looks like one of the, like, talking heads on Drunk History. And that's why I keep thinking he looks familiar. So he spoke English fluently, but with a German accent. He was said to be social, but he was prone to laughing aimlessly, which led many people to think of him as a half-wit. So, okay, he had that Joker disease where he would just laugh at nothing, and people were like, man, this dude's fucking crazy. So the daughter was Kate, and she was the friendliest of the bunch, friendliest being in quotations, speaking good English with just a slight accent, and bore cultivated social skills. A beautiful girl of about 23, she was quick to laugh and talk with strangers. She and her brother John often attended Sunday school, which I didn't even know you could do that as an adult, but apparently that's a thing, at nearby Harmony Grove, and were readily accepted into the community. Kate, so the daughter, was a self-proclaimed healer. So the mom's like, I'm a medium. Kate said that she was a self-proclaimed healer and psychic, and she even gave lectures on spiritualism and conducted seances. So she also claimed to possess psychic powers, including the ability to communicate with the dead. She would distribute, like, flyers being like, hey, check me out on the shit. Like, I can talk to the dead. Like, come to me, like, with all your Ghostbuster needs kind of thing. So she would, like, give out these circulars that proclaimed her, like, skills, including supernatural powers and the ability to cure illness and, like, all this shit, right? And she started making, like, mad money because the spiritualism lecture circuit at that time was, like, super popular. It was, like, post-Civil War. Like, everybody was, like, still grieving. And, like, so everybody was, like, looking for a connection to, like, that world, like talking with the dead and stuff.
Oh yeah,
that wasn't in the article. That was my own.
Every family lost someone.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's nothing to do. You know, there's no TV. There's no Netflix.
Right. It's like they had for fun was to, like, play Bloody Mary in the mirror. They were like, "This is our game. This is what we do.
Yeah, let's play with some broken glass or try to talk to dead people."
Oh, I think it's called, like, Ask Stanley or something. Did you ever play that when you were a kid? Where you put, like, two pencils on a cross, like you put one pencil one way and another pencil, lay another pencil the opposite way on top of it, and you write, like, something out on a piece of paper and it spins to point to, like, your answer.
Do you know what I'm talking about? I think it's called
Ask Charlie or Ask Stanley or something like that. But yeah, that was really fun. But I imagine that's what they're doing because it's a bit middle of nowhere and they probably only had a pencil and piece of paper to keep them occupied. Boop, boop, boop. So she soon found herself and the lecture circuit, and she was making mad money. Okay. The petite auburn-haired beauty had a desire for notoriety and often advocated free love and justification for murder in her lectures. Along with her desire for fame, she also craved wealth and position. Through her beauty and social skills, she gained her popularity with the locals.
Can we just rewind to, like, she used free love as rationale for murder?
No. When she was giving her lectures and spiritualism, she was like, I'm all about free love, man. We should all be about free love. And then she also, like, another thing was like, oh, some murder is justified. Kind of a thing. Like, okay. Just drop that hardball on them. Beep, beep, beep. So she was, like, taking off in lecture circuit. And she's like, I'm the shit. I can talk to dead people and stuff. So eventually it starts freaking out the locals. And they start calling her, satanic. They're like, you a she-devil. Like, something's going on. She was a particular member of the Bender family that would eventually take most of the blame for what was to come soon to be found out about this family. When the Benders opened their store and their inn, it was 1871, many travelers would stop for a meal or supplies. However, some of those men who frequently carried large sums of cash with the intention of settling, buying stock, or purchasing a claim, began to go missing. When friends and family began to look for them, they could trace them as far as the Big Hill country of southeast Kansas before they could find no trace of the lost traveler. These first few missing travelers didn't raise an overall alarm in the area, as it was not uncommon during those days for men to simply continue on their journey westward. And there was, you know, they couldn't send out a tweet and be like, hey, yo, I made it to California. Goals lit. Bring me back. retweet for retweet. So it wasn't like weird at first that they were going missing. However, as more time passed, the disappearances became more frequent. And by the spring of 19... Oh, my God. No.
And they're all disappearing in the same, like, area?
This family lived on one of the popular trails that was heading out west. So it would be, like, essentially if you were, like, on Interstate 81 and you were stopping in Bogota at a truck stop, they were the truck stop. They were an inn and all that stuff, right? But imagine, like, you stop there and, like, it's the only gas station on your way out to the middle of nowhere, and, like, that's the last place people are being seen.
Okay, so this is by trace. You, like, an investigator came by and asked about a person.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Beep, boop, beep. Oh. Okay, so by the spring of 1873, the region had become strife with rumors, and travelers began to avoid that trail. They were like, something's fucking amiss. People aren't coming back. When neighboring communities started to make slanderous insinuations, the Osage Township called a meeting held at the Harmony Grove Schoolhouse in March to see what, if anything, could be done. About 75 people attended the gathering, including both of the Bender men. The discussion began regarding the 10 people who were reported missing, including a well-known Independence physician named Dr. William H. York.
Like, over the course of a year, or?
Okay, like, they opened this in 71. This is now the spring of 73. And there are multiple people missing, but 10 of those people have families that are like, no, like that are actively looking for them. They're like, no, our family's not missing. Like, something happened to them. Like, they wouldn't just not send any word or anything. So one of the people missing was Dr. William H. York. Okay, with the full realization that there truly was a major problem in their township, the group decided to search every farmstead between Big Hill Creek and Drum Creek. When most of the attendees volunteered to have their premises searched, The vendors, they're just sitting in the corner and like whistling, like twiddling their thumbs, like, not us. Like, yeah, looking guilty as hell. Sometime later, Billy Toll, a neighbor of the vendors, noticed that the vendor inn, I'm sorry, that's just the funniest fucking name for a stop.
It kind of sounds like brothel.
Yeah, you want to go check out the vendor inn?
Yeah.
So anyway, the neighbor noticed that it was abandoned, like it appeared abandoned in the, all, because they had a bunch of animals and stuff, they had a farm, and none of the animals were getting fed. Like they noticed that the cows and shit were getting skinny and just didn't look like they were being taken care of. So Billy Toll reported the news to Leroy F. Dick, the township trustee, and a search party was...
Wait, that's news? Like, that...
That's... Yeah.
Well, those cows ain't being fed.
Well, he said that the place looked abandoned.
Oh, wow.
So he probably was like, oh, shit, all these people are going missing, and now this family's missing. So he probably was like... He was doing it with good intention.
Sure.
So, Leroy F. Dick, blah, 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 township trustee... Okay, so a search party was soon formed, which included, okay, so that Dr. York that went missing, so the search party included his brother, which was Colonial A.M. York, which is a hell of a name, of Fort Scott, Kansas. When the men arrived at the property, they found, okay, so the cabin that the vendors were living in, they found it empty of food, empty of clothing, and personal possessions. They were also met by a terrible smell inside the abandoned inn. A trap door nailed shut was discovered in the floor of the cabin. Are you ready for this? Prying it open, the men found a 6-foot deep hole that was filled with... What do you think it's going to be filled with?
Cheetos?
Clotted blood, which is what was causing the terrible odor. Not
just blood?
Clotted blood.
Oh, God,
how
it's
fucking
all blood?
Weird. Yeah, all blood. No bodies in it. Just blood.
What the fuck?
Right? Fucking weird, right? Okay. Boo, 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 boo.
It's just a giant hole filled with blood. Like
literally.
Coagulated blood.
Yeah, clotted blood.
Oh, my God.
It says, however, there were no bodies found in the hole.
Fuck.
Okay. So, finally, the men physically moved the entire cabin, which I don't know what that means. The men physically moved the entire cabin to the side and began to... Oh! They moved. They just, I guess, picked it up off the foundation and scooted it because they then began to search underneath, but they couldn't find any bodies there either. So they just have, like, this 6-foot hole of blood, but they cannot find bodies. So continuing, they began to dig around the cabin, especially in the area the vendors had utilized as a vegetable garden and orchard. At the site of a freshly stirred depression in the earth, they found the first body, buried head down with his feet scarcely covered. It was the corpse of Dr. William H. York. His skull was bludgeoned and his throat was cut from ear to ear. So they're like, oh shit, it's popping now. So the digging continued the next day, and 9 other bodies and numerous dismembered body parts were found, including a woman and a little girl. The burial site was christened Hell's Half Acre. And another brother of Dr. York, a lawyer and state senator residing in Independence, offered a $1,000 reward for information leading to the Bender family's arrest. On May 17th, Governor Thomas Osborne added that amounts by offering $2,000 in rewards for the apprehension of all of the family members. Word of the gruesome murders spread fast, and thousands of people flocked to the site, including news reporters from as far away as New York and Chicago. The Bender cabin was ripped apart by gruesome souvenir hunters right down to the bloody bricks that lined the cellar.
Oh, God.
Bit by bit, the story of the Benders was pieced together. No pun intended. The Benders were obviously not what they appeared. In fact, they weren't even family. The only ones that were actually related was Ma and Kate. So, do you want to know what happened? What these shitbirds were up to?
I mean, they couldn't have gotten far. This is like 1874.
Okay. Right? So, when the visitors stopped in for a meal, what they would do is they would sit them at a table, just like we're sitting right here, but with their back to the large canvas sheet separating the inn from the living quarters that I mentioned in the beginning. Are you following me?
Okay.
Okay. Then Kate would begin to charm the men with her social skills, flirting, or even revealing her psychic gifts. And as the men gave their full attention to the alluring Kate, Pa and John Bender, hiding behind the canvas, would strike the unsuspecting traveler in the skull with a hammer. Ma and Kate would then rifle the body for money, pushing him through the trap door into the hole below the cabin, where Kate would slit his throat. During the night, the body would then be buried in the garden behind the house. Their downfall was the murder of a father and daughter named Loncher, L-O-N-C-H-E-R, and that of Dr. William York, who had come looking for the missing pair. In the winter of 1872, Mr. Lochner and his daughter had left Independence for Iowa, but were never heard from again. In the spring of 1873, Dr. York took it upon himself to go looking for... So not only did these people go missing, but the guy that went to go look for the missing people also went missing.
Yeah, that's kind of a pattern there.
and he went missing, stopping at the exact same spot. So though he reached Fort Scott unscathed and started to return to Independence in about March 8th, he never reached home. So this part's kind of unclear because I've heard this told two different ways. Either he stopped at the inn and left without getting killed and then came back, like, to stay on his way back and then got killed, or he only stopped at the inn on his way back. But I've heard it told both ways. I've heard it told that he actually escaped them alive, went on to continue looking for people, and when he was coming back, he was like, oh, I'll stay at that nice inn again. And that's when they killed him. But I'm not sure if that's totally true, because that's not what they say in this article. Dr. York had two brothers, one living in Fort Scott and the other in Independence. Both knew of his travel plans, and when he failed to return home, an all-out search began for the missing doctor. His brother, Colonel A.M. York, leading a contingency of some 50 men, began to question every traveler along the trail to stop, and to stop at the area homesteads. One of those places was the Bender Inn. The Benders tried to help by admitting that Dr. York had stopped by their place, but convinced the search party that he had left and was probably waylaid by Indians. Even Kate, with her clairvoyant abilities, attempted to search for the missing doctor to throw any suspicion off herself. Colonel York's visit and the meeting at the Harmony Grove Schoolhouse, the Bender family fled. It was only a few days later that the homestead was found abandoned and the search party began to discover the grisly remains of bodies. The diggers were astounded to find what would now become known as one of America's first mass murder burial grounds, as body after body was uncovered. 10 bodies were found in the Bender's apple orchards, including Dr. York and some of the people that he had been searching for, which was Mr. Launcher and his daughter. And his daughter was only like 7 or 8 years old. It's really sad. More gruesomely, though, the little girl's body was found to have multiple injuries, none of which would have caused death, so it was speculated that the little girl was buried alive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Of the discovery of her remains, the Kansas City Times reported, the little girl was probably 8 years of age and had long, sunny hair and some traces of beauty on a countenance that was not yet entirely disfigured by decay. One arm was broken, the breastbone had been driven in, the right knee had been wrenched from its socket, and the leg doubled up under the body. Nothing like this sickening series of crimes has ever been reported in the whole history of the country. Other bodies found in the garden were that of Henry McKenzie, Other bodies found in the garden were those of Henry Mackenzie's mutilated remains. Three men by the names of Ben Brown, W.F. McCrotty, and John Geary, as well as an
the most like 1800s. I know, like sounding
McCrotty.
Names.
McCrotty. Okay.
McCrotty?
McCrotty, like M C C R O T T Y. Like you're karate, but you're McCrotty. I don't get it. As well as unidentified male and female. John's Boyle's body was found in the well. Dismembered parts of several other victims were also discovered, but could never be properly identified. Four other bodies with crushed skulls and slit throats were also found outside the property in Drum Creek in the surrounding prairie. For all the deaths, the Benders gained only about, do you want to guess how much money they made robbing all these people?
8,000.
They only made $4,600.
I mean, that's probably a shitload of money back then.
Yeah, but for all these deaths, they got $4,600. Okay, they did also get two teams of horses and wagons, a pony, and a saddle. Worth it? I don't think so.
Well, until you said the pony, you know, I was kind of on the fence.
Yeah. Because some of the travelers were carrying nothing of value, it was widely speculated that the Benders killed simply for the bloody thrill of it. So some of these people literally didn't have anything to steal. They just killed them because they thought it was fun. As word of the grisly murder spread, more and more travelers came forward to tell their own stories of narrow escape, including one gentleman by the name of William Pickering.
If you narrowly escaped, you didn't tell anyone, dude?
Okay, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
When he refused to sit with his back to the canvas because of its disgusting stains, Pickering said that Kate Bender threatened him with a knife, at which point he fled the premises. A Catholic priest said that he too fled when he saw one of the Bender men concealing a large hammer. After following a fresh trail of wagon tracks, a search party found that the Benders had gone to the town of nearby Thayer, some 12 miles to the north. There, they purchased tickets on the northbound Leavenworth, Lawrence, and Galveston train to Humboldt. Several days later, the Benders' team and wagon were found a short distance away, the horses nearly starved. Upon further investigation, Captain James B. Ransom, the train's conductor, said that John Jr. and Kate disembarked at Chanute and took the Missouri, Kansas, and Texas railroad train south to Red River near Denison, Texas, which was the terminus of the railroad. Allegedly, the pair then fled through an outlaw colony along the border of Texas and New Mexico. While Ma and Pa Bender continued on the train north to Kansas City, where it was believed they transferred to a train heading to St. Louis. So attempts to capture the bloodthirsty family were immediately made by both law enforcers and vigilantes alike. Though no one ever collected on the rewards offered, rumors began to fly of several parties who had captured and killed the Benders. One vigilante group claimed to have shot down the men, Ma, and burned Kate alive. As the witch they believed her to be. Another group claimed that they had caught the Benders while escaping south and lynched them before throwing their bodies into a river. Yet another group claimed to have killed the Benders during a gunfight and buried their bodies on the prairie. However, none of these tales were ever confirmed, nor bodies found, so most thought that the Benders had managed to escape. For years, sightings of Ma and Kate were reported, and in 1889, two women were actually... were actually extradited from Michigan on the charge. Though the pair were jailed, the case was eventually dropped for lack of evidence. Of the family, Pa Bender was actually found to have been a man named John Flickinger from either Germany or Holland. Though he allegedly committed suicide in 1884 in Lake Michigan, others believe that Ma and Kate murdered him because he had fled Cherryvale with all the cash and valuables that they had taken from their victims. Ma Bender was born Elmira Meek in the Adirondacks and was married as a teenager to a man named George Griffith. After burying him, a dozen children, including Kate, Mr. Griffith suddenly died. Some said of a bad place on his head resembling a dent that might have been made with a hammer. Afterwards, she reportedly remarried several times, killing those husbands as well. And she also killed she killed her other husbands too, right? Then she kills three of her older children so they couldn't testify against her.
Yeah, that's a ice cold bitch.
Yeah, she's a real one. So John Jr. was actually found to become... John Jr. was actually found to have been a man called John Gebhardt. His habit of laughing aimlessly was what led to him being described as a half-wit, though many afterward believe this was simply a ruse to disguise his clever nature. Though most were led to believe that John and Kate were sister and brother, others said that they sometimes passed as man and wife. The two were known to have had a relationship, and further tales abounded that when Kate became pregnant, they would simply bash the baby's head in once it was born. After the Benders escaped, one detective who had closely followed all of the leads said that he traced Gebhardt to outlaw country along the Texas-New Mexico border, where he had found the criminal had died of apoplexy? I don't know what that word is.
There's some weird old-timey disease. A-P-O-P-L-E-X-Y.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Kate, so our psychic... Kate was the fifth child of Ma Bender and was born Eliza Griffith. At some point, she married and went by the name Sarah Eliza Davis. Allegedly, while working at the Bender Inn, she also earned her keep as a prostitute, adding an additional amount to the traveler's bill for the privilege of laying with her. In the end, it was Kate who was primarily blamed for the numerous bloody murders that, even in her young age, was the inspiration for the crime.
So I just looked it up. $4,000 in 1875 dollars. You know, if you count inflation, that's about $94,000 today. So not a huge amount of money, but like a nice chunk of change if you're living in bumfuck nowhere.
True.
You know.
All right. Okay, so she was the inspiration for the crimes. Beep, boop, beep. Though the tales of what happened to the Benders can only be speculated as to their accuracy, the fact that 10 bodies were found on the property is not disputed. Other corpses found in the area as well, as well as the many mysterious disturbances of other lonely travelers, led the locals to believe that the Benders actually killed more than 20 people. The sensational tales and rumors of the Benders continued well into the 20th century, but as to what actually happened to them remains one of the greatest unsolved mysteries of the Old West. If the terrible story of the Benders was not in and of itself legend enough, another tale began to circulate regarding the property on which the Benders had once lived. The old Bender property was haunted, so the rumor said. A decade after the gruesome killings, nothing was left of the cabin and the outbuildings on the property, the only thing remaining an empty hole that had once been the cellar. From these depths allegedly came the souls of those murdered on the site, wandering about the property, making moaning sounds that could be heard by passersby. Of those most often report seeing glowing apparitions on the property were those who came to the site in search of some long-lost souvenir of grisly murders. Quickly, the scavengers were frightened away by the dead souls and afraid. Okay. Cool. So it was haunted. And so people fucked off.
It's like, yeah, no shit.
Yeah. So basically they go on and they start talking about the haunting, which you guys can read about if you want. And then it says that the Bender Museum was created in Cherryvale in 1961. And then it just goes on to talk about, there's like a plaque on like the lands where they were, like a historical marker and stuff. It's actually
on this day, 200 years ago, a bunch of fucking people got killed.
Right. It's actually the only mass murder site that has been historically marked. like ever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you don't want to celebrate it and give people additional incentive.
So they got away, though. They never got caught.
Yeah, no idea what happened. They probably died like 10 years later.
Maybe. Okay, so do you want to bring it into 2020?
No.
Do you want to hear an update?
Okay.
Okay, the 152 acres of land that once belonged to the Bloody Benders is for sale as part of 15 tracts of land that were put up by auction by the Schrader Real Estate and Auction Company. Let's buy it. I'm so serious.
So you can
buy.
I ain't living there. I mean, if you want to
live there, I would totally live there. I would live the fuck out of that place.
Like, if you want to like open like a novelty like haunted house, I'm all for it. But
I don't think there's anything novelty about it. I think that shit is hella haunted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I say let's go for it. Oh, and shout out to CNN for the update news breaking that they are selling it. That's where I got that from. Yeah, what's really fucked up is if you read the CNN article about it being for sale, so they found those 10 bodies, but they didn't excavate any else of the land, any else of the 160 acres.
So there might be even more bodies?
Right, so they said, to this day, it says, to my knowledge, there have been no efforts to excavate the property during the time my clients have lived and owned the farm, says Brett Wellings, the auction manager for that real estate company. Prior to the ownership, which took place in the 1950s, there could have been an excavation, but I'm not aware of it. So, if you guys want to buy some super haunted fucking land out west in Kansas, it's up for sale. And that's the story. The Bloody Benders.
Oh, what still gets me is like the hole is like full of blood.
Clotted blood. Coagulated clotted blood. Oh, that had to have been like the worst fucking smell.
Yeah, see, what I understand is like, you know, victim number 7 or 8. It must have been pretty rank even by then, you know.
Yeah, because they only discovered 10 bodies. But let's say that. Let's just count just the 10. Yeah. So 10 people's worth of blood.
There's like this bloody canvas sheet, like... Doesn't that sketch you out a little bit?
That's why that one dude was like, I'm not sitting my neck with my fucking back to this janky ass setup you got here. Bloodstains on this shit. Like, what? I love that the Catholic priest was like, oh, he's carrying a hammer. It might be time to go. So that is the story of the Bloody Benders, my friend. And I'm sorry if you guys have heard that story before. I know it's a pretty popular true crime story, but... I saw the article that the land was for sale, and I was like, yo, I gotta tell Chris this story. Because the whole point of this podcast is I have vast knowledge of this useless, morbid shit, and Christopher knows none of it. So I'm just unloading all of my bullshit onto him.
Yeah, so I mean, like, we would do this over brunch, and then eventually we were like, why don't we just do a podcast?
Me, super day drunk, off mimosas, like... Bitch, let me tell you the most grisly murder story I know.
Wait, so were the Benders like the first documented, like,
they were the first documented serial killers in America, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And not only that, but they were a fucking crew. Like, it wasn't even just like a one-off random dude or Jack the Ripper type. It was a freaking family, which, of course, they weren't really a family, but they posed as one. Fucking gnarly dude. And they never got caught. And there's like... and you can also do like some research on this if you guys feel so inclined. But there were several like people that were like, I've seen Ma Bender, I've seen Kate, blah, 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 like throughout the years. But like, yeah, like nothing ever was proven. Like they even extradited those women from Michigan. And we to this day don't even know if they had the right people. But they let them go because they didn't have enough evidence.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Can you imagine like being the murderer and like your defense? The way that you get off is just being like, I'm not that person. Prove I'm that person. Back in the 1800s, I'm not that person. Prove it. All right. I think that's it for us this week because we are in a room that is about 5,000 degrees. Anything you wanted to go over before we sign off? Check out our Facebook and our Twitter and our YouTube and our Instagram and our Gmail account and send me your ideas for stories. Tell us you love us. Tell us if we suck and you just really hate us whatever. Whatever's in your heart. Yeah. Let us know.
Yeah, and let me know if you want Tales from the Dark Web.
Yeah.
To become a regular fixture on the show. Yeah. I know it was super quiet last time, but...
We'll fix it. We're going to fix it, you guys. We promise. All right, you guys. Well, thanks so much for listening, and we'll check you next week. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.